And now, a man who campaigned against Barack Obama in all 57 states, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. I'm Mark Gillar, your host. We have a very special show today. We're going to be speaking with Steve Gorham, a climate expert who's waging this battle against the environmentalists. Recently, Al Gore supporters burned a copy of his book, so you can tell he's getting under their skin. But before we speak with Steve Gorham, we have a very special guest, Mr. Dan Bongino. He served in the Secret Service for over 12 years. He's here to talk to us about his New York Times best-selling book, Life Inside the Bubble, Why a Top-Ranked Secret Service Agent Walked Away from It All. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, oh, absolutely. I'm thrilled to have you on the show. You've made a major news splash recently with this book, and I think one of the things we need to let listeners know right away is that this isn't some sort of dirty, gossipy, tell-all book about the people you were protecting.
Right, right. And unfortunately, one person, you know, my fight's always been with the establishment Republican Party as well as the Democratic Party, and one standard attack from the establishment Republicans was this was some kind of a tell-all violating my oath, which is absurd. Matter of fact, even if you read the reviews on Amazon, you'll see clearly that that's not the case. The book was just meant to sound the alarm against a government encroaching on our civil liberties and our personal liberty sphere every day, and that was the intention of the book. There's no if you're looking for a salacious tell-all, this is not your book, I promise you.
Yeah, there are a lot of books by Ronald Kessler where he quotes Secret Service agents, and he'll give you all the skinny on the people they protected. So if you're looking for that, those books are out there. But this, was a very respectful book in terms of the treatment of the subjects that you protected. But the title of the book, Life Inside the Bubble, pretty much tells it all. Are the presidents, and I know you've protected two of them, George W. Bush and Barack Obama, so insulated from the American people, Dan, that, for instance, Barack Obama might not get what a disaster Benghazi has been, what a disaster Fast and Furious was, how upset the American people are regarding the IRS targeting the Tea Party, and most recently, what a disaster Obamacare has been? Is it possible for him to be so insulated by yes men that he really doesn't get that?
Yeah, not only possible, it's actually happening right now. The analogy I always use is, being the president, not immediately, but after a couple of years in office, is similar to being Jim Carrey in The Truman Show. It's like you're acting in a play or a movie, and you don't know you're acting. You think this is all real. But everything around the president, and even to an extent, people like Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi in these leadership positions in our Congress, and I use that leadership term loosely, everything around them is staged. And that starts to take a effect on their psyche, because you have to understand they're not getting a dose of reality. And I'll give you an example. The outrage over Obamacare. You know, you may think that the president understands. How can you miss this? It's on all the 24-hour news networks. People are upset. The polls are bad. But it's not real to him. It's almost an esoteric concept. It's poll numbers. It's not real Americans. And the idea is it becomes a political game for him. It doesn't become, it doesn't, as they used to say a couple friends of mine in the Bush administration, it doesn't bleed for him, he doesn't feel it. And when he doesn't feel it, it just becomes a political game to manipulate polls and rescue the next election. It doesn't become a way to make the lives of Americans any better. And I think you're seeing that now. The man is completely, totally out of touch.
A lot of people would argue that we don't really have a true two-party system in this country anymore. When you get to the very top, it's almost like we've all seen and been involved in court cases where two attorneys are screaming at each other during the trial, and then they go out for lunch together. And we see all the time people fighting on the House floor, parties taking shots at each other, but then on the weekends they're playing golf together. In your opinion, do we have a true two-party system in this country, or is there a ruling elite class on both sides that has more in common with each other than they do with the American people?
Yeah, it's a good question, Mark. I would argue strongly that we have a four-party system. You have moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans, and you have what you would consider the Tea Party libertarian right and the Occupy Wall Street hard socialist left. But here's where people go wrong. and I think where your question was alluding to, there's really no difference in my view and from what I've seen between what you would call a moderate Democrat and a moderate Republican. They're both elitist establishment, cronyist insiders that are bought off by business interests and really have sold out the American people. And what bothers me about that is, you know, there's this talk about the brand, you know, hurting the Republican brand, and the attacks and with the compliant media usually directed at people who consider themselves, you know, the Tea Party or Libertarian wing of the party. They're not the ones hurting the brand. The Republican brand has always supposedly stood for, you know, you can spend your money better than the government, pro-growth oriented tax rates. No one's arguing for no taxes. We're just arguing for the lowest tax rate possible to finance the constitutional role of government and a growing prosperous economy. Patient controlled health care, school choice, these are Republican ideas, but you find moderate Republicans, you know, even recently with school choice in Pennsylvania, you see moderate Republicans selling out the American people. They're the ones hurting the brand, not us. You also see moderate Democrats doing the same thing, you know, selling out to the Chamber of Commerce and business interests like that. You know, although I completely fundamentally disagree with the Occupy movement, I would argue we almost have more in common with them than we do moderate Republicans. You know, at least they're honest about taking your money. Okay, I believe in socialism, right? I mean, they're like, I just think we should redistribute income, and that's just the way it should. At least they're honest about it. What I find troubling about the moderate center elected, not the American people, not moderate Americans, but the so-called moderate elected officials, they're fundamentally dishonest about it. No, we're in this for you. We're in this for the little guy. You hear it all the time. And, you know, unless the little guy or, you know, crony insider K Street interest, they're just lying to you. And that, yeah, you're right. The real battle now is between government elites and the American people, not between the Democrats and Republicans. Don't be misled for a minute. They're not our friends, I promise you.
There's an old saying that a group of people that consistently votes for one particular party is eventually respected by neither. And I think we've kind of seen that in the way the Democrats treat minorities. They know they're going to get that vote. They throw them a few bones prior to election, and then they want them to show up on election day and vote Democrat. It's the same thing with the Tea Party. Oh, the Republicans want us there on election day. They want us there on election day. But after that, they're really not going to do a whole lot for us. So when you talk about both sides coming together and you talk about the Tea Party being similar to Occupy Wall Street, hey, both groups didn't appreciate the bailouts. Both groups don't really like being spied on by the government. Both groups don't like being pushed around by the man. As I joked with Sean Hannity one day, you know, if you take the Tea Party and, you know, take away their soap, take away their work ethic, and take away their insistence that people not take illegal drugs, you know, you might have something very similar to the Occupy movement. But
you're not inaccurate by saying that. I mean, it's really true. Absent economic policy, the idea. Ideology is not that fundamentally disconnected.
It's really not, and I think that's what's hilarious about all this. And you know, the Occupy movement started griping about the bailouts. I often wonder, well, where were they whenever the Tea Party was griping about it? But let me get back to the president and the responsibility and the insulation and so forth. Some people, Dan, and you've been really close to two presidents. Some people would argue and say, you know, Dan, I read your book. You know, I read the thing about Benghazi and Fast and Furious and so forth. Every president is going to have problems. I mean, you know, Nixon had Watergate. Reagan and Bush 41 had Iran-Contra. Clinton had Monica Lewinsky. George W. Bush said there were going to be weapons of mass destruction, and there weren't. And now we've got Obama with Fast and Furious, you know, Benghazi, the Tea Party being targeted by the IRS, and Obamacare. If you held presidents accountable for everything that happens in their administration, nobody would want the job because everybody would get in trouble for something. You got to give these guys a free pass. They can't be held accountable for these types of things. What's your take on that argument?
Well, it's really an indictment of the entire system saying that. If the president can't be held accountable as a CEO of, you know, America Inc. at this point, then maybe we need to streamline the organization. I mean, where else in an accountable private sector organization would we say something like that? You know, in Apple or IBM, and I, you know, I get it. We're not a business. The government is not a business. I understand that. But it is an organization. You know, where else would – maybe I'll give you a different example. Where else in sports – you know, pro sports, would a coach or an owner of a team not be held accountable either by the fans? You know, I can think down here in Baltimore, you know, when the Orioles went through a 10-year slide or so, everybody wanted Peter Angelos's head. I mean, and they have to make changes. But that's not what happens in the government. Things just continue on. There's no effort at all to streamline, to get rid of things like baseline budgeting. There's no effort at all. It just goes on and on. Republicans, Democrats, Democrats spend money. Republicans spend money. Democrats spend a little bit more. Republicans spend a lot more. Nothing seems to change. And that's why in the book I make some very serious proposals using the law enforcement intelligence operation as an example of how to actually change things going forward. You know, ridding ourselves of this alphabet soup of federal law enforcement agencies, which frankly serves no purpose at all. I mean, if you can explain to me in practical terms why we need a DEA, FBI, ATF, Secret Service, I mean, you know, ICE, what are they, BICE now? I mean, it's absurd. None of the computer systems talk to each other. The agents barely talk to each other. We have to get task force together just to run joint operations. It makes no sense, but that's the problem in government in general. Once you found and create an agency or whatever, any type of subsection of government, it never, ever goes away because you create an interest group for each agency, and those interest groups are in competition with each other to increase their fiefdoms. And that's why you get things like, oh, well, the president doesn't know what's going on. Well, then what's the point? Then why have a president? Let's just go to a parliamentary system at this point then. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
We're still stuck with the Department of Energy, thanks to Carter. I mean, I would love for anyone to talk to me currently about what the Department of Agriculture, Department of Energy, or Department of Education
right.
is actually doing that makes them worth the tax dollars that we're putting in. One thing I want to talk to you about, because this show deals with it a lot, is that you were recently speaking at the Heritage Foundation, and I think, for lack of a better way of saying it, you got heckled by a birther, and you told him or her, I don't even know what it was, when they said the president was born outside of the United States, that is absolutely untrue. We have been looking into that with this show for a long, long time, and you're the first person I've talked to that's actually known the president, been inches away from the president on a daily basis. What, if anything, from your time as a Secret Service agent, can you tell us that might make more people feel that this isn't something to be concerned about? Because you said that this is untrue, so I'm wondering how you know that.
Well, listen, folks, working for the government with the highest clearance you can possibly have, you know, a TSSCI, top secret sensitive compartmentalized information. I can tell you one thing for an absolute fact, and you can believe it or not, that's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody keeps secrets in the government. Nobody. A secret like that is worth millions of dollars in publicity, in book deals. Now, if you're a free market economist like I am, do you think that, one, that could be kept secret, number one? And if it was, why hasn't someone sold that secret yet? That's my first point. My second point is I've been in these conversations. You're in the room when people talk. I find it odd that in the, you know, almost 3 years I was with President Obama, and having traveled around the world, spoken to people who knew him in Hawaii, in Indonesia, everywhere else, that not one person mentioned to me, like, hey, off the record, he wasn't born. It never happened.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if that bothers you, but my take on this thing is we're wasting our time. The president is dismantling our economy, our healthcare system, our education system, is really ignoring the managed decline of America, you know, to institute an economic system not in alignment with our fundamental freedom-based ideology. And we're wasting our time on stupidity. The president was born in the United States. Why would you allocate your time or your money or anything else to fight a fight that I'm telling you is not true when there are things in front of you that are worse and are true? The president, I have no doubt, did use the IRS to target conservative groups. I have no doubt about that. The president did order his EPA through his minions to charge conservative groups for FOIA requests while not charging liberal groups. You know, the president did avoid any responsibility on Obamacare as it dismantles the greatest healthcare system in the world. I don't understand why you're wasting your time on this. It's not true. I'm telling you it's not true.
Okay. All right. Real quick, because you talked about wasting time and wasting money, the president has probably spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $2 million with Perkins and Coy, trying to avoid having to show the original birth certificate that's in the vault in Hawaii. From a common sense standpoint, nobody would spend a dime if all they had to do was show what was in the vault. That's one of the things that bothers me from a common sense standpoint. And
right, but secondly, can I stop you there? Wait, just let me just, because that's important. I understand. And our goals are the same. It's just strategically speaking, the birther argument is used in the mainstream media to dismantle the credibility of conservatives who otherwise have very good points on economic health care, education, entitlement issues. It's used to discredit you. The president is playing chess while we're playing checkers. You're being used. The reason I think this money was spent, and I can't confirm it, I don't know that, I haven't looked into that, but I have no question that there wasn't a bunch of honesty on the birth certificate issue in the beginning, but I think that was done to keep this in the media to further discredit you. In other words, you're being used. It's almost like triple reverse psychology. The president was born in the United States. I'm sorry that we're wasting so much time on this. There is no way. I even talk about it in the Benghazi chapter. The extent that they went to keep the Benghazi survivors quiet, and even that hasn't worked. They're starting to creep out now. You have the DSS agent, Walter Reed. This secret, if it was true, if it was a secret, is worth millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And nobody has said anything. It just doesn't make sense. I'm telling you, you're being used. I've heard some of these conversations amongst these lower-level staffers. They laugh at this argument because they know no one will take you seriously the minute you bring it up. And I just think there's really serious fights to fight, and we're just wasting a lot of time on it.
Okay, I'm going to say one last thing, and then we'll move on. One, we're a country where we know how to multitask, and one extra issue isn't going to bog us down. So there are more important issues, but there's no reason why you can't fight all of them. And the other thing I'll add to this is there are different flavors of birthers. Some people just say, hey, based on the way the Constitution is written with the natural born citizen clause, I don't believe he's qualified. I think he was born in Hawaii, but I believe the way the law is written, he doesn't really qualify under a strict interpretation of the Constitution and what it means to be a natural born citizen. It has nothing to do with where he's born. He could be born in Hawaii, but if you have one parent born in another country, some people argue that that's in violation of the Constitution. I don't think those people are crazy, but the media has done a good job of lumping all people together. To be honest with you, the flavor of birther that I am is not that I believe he was born in Kenya. I think it's ridiculous to think that a young white girl, 17 years of age, would run to Kenya and have a baby when the best medical care, as you've said, is right here in the United States. But I approach it from the standpoint that I know enough about to know that that document has some forensic problems with it. But let me just close in saying this. You have said that everyone should be held accountable and a president shouldn't be allowed to get away with anything. If once you're in Congress, Sheriff Arpaio, and by the way, I happen to know because I've worked with him as a researcher for the last 2 years, there has been a major break in the case, both forensically and from the standpoint of someone talking. If you were in Congress and somebody came forward and said, we've got the case, it's a slam dunk, here's the forensic evidence, and here's testimony from a witness, would you at that point in Congress be willing to look at it?
Listen, I'm willing to look at anything. The point is, it's not going to happen. I'm telling you, the president was born in the United States. I've met people during the course of my time doing advanced work
I said the president. I didn't say the president was born outside the country. I didn't say that. I said that there's forensic evidence that the document has had slight alterations. That's my position.
Well, I mean, listen, I haven't seen anything. No one's presented any evidence to me otherwise. And all I can tell you is I was in the most inner circle you can get, what we'd call within arm's reach. I can't understand why we continue. I just can't. I'm telling you that no one – I was with the man for 3 years, people who knew him growing up. If I don't know anything about what's going on over there. All I can tell you is there are real fights going on here. and wasting time. And I get we're multitaskers. I understand that. But you're not multitaskers in the sense that you can put 25 hours in a 24-hour day. There is an opportunity cost to time. And all the time we waste on an argument that I'm telling you is not true, no matter what, is really wasted away from fighting the real fight. And what's going to happen is we're going to wake up one day if we keep burning time on tangential issues right now that are just not true. And you're going to find yourself in a very different economy your kids are going to suffer for. Your kids are going to be paying 19-25% interest rates to buy a car, a home. You're going to live in an economy where, you know, 55-65-75% of your earned income is going to be redistributed into inefficient means. You're going to wake up with growth rates of, you know, maybe 1%. We're going to be in a European social democracy. I just don't understand, again, why we're wasting all this time. I mean, why would I not say that if I knew it?
My point is that you say we're wasting time, but nothing's getting done on Benghazi. Nothing's being done on the IRS targeting the Tea Party. Nothing is being done about Fast and Furious. And with or without the birther issue, nothing is going to get done on those issues. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that we're wasting so much time on the birther issue that we can't get these other things accomplished. You've been in an inner circle for a few years. I've been in an inner circle, too. I'm in Sheriff Arpaio's inner circle. And in all fairness to you, you don't know the latest break in the case. You don't know what evidence he has. I do. I'm not allowed to divulge it at this time, but I can tell you, and this the record really needs to be set straight. Sheriff Arpaio never set out to prove that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. He never set out to prove he was born outside the United States. He never set out to prove that Malcolm X or Frank Marshall Davis is Obama's real daddy. Those are not goals of the Sheriff Arpaio's team. It has nothing to do with their investigation. Their investigation is plain and simple. It's about document fraud, forensic evidence, and witnesses that are coming forward. That evidence will break within about 90 days, and I'll give you a chance to tell me what you think after that evidence hits the general public at that time. Right now, you're not operating in the same position I am because I'm so close to Sheriff Arpaio's investigation. But enough about the birther stuff. We both expressed our opinions on it, and I fully get where you're coming from. I fully get where you're coming from, too. But right now, you're running for a very important office. In the time we've got left, tell the people in Maryland why you're their man, or should be.
I'll listen to you. You know, we say all the time we're fed up with the process, and, you know, I get questioned all the time as well, you know, why do you want to join these guys if they're so bad? Well, you know, I ask you, I turn the question on you and your audience, and I say, you know, following the old Plato logic, that if you don't get involved in the process, you're destined to be ruled by people lesser than yourself. I think it's time for action, you know, not words. And words are great if they motivate action. If they don't motivate action, they're meaningless. It's time for people like us to get off the couch and do something and start to build grassroots movements, because grassroots movements is what the K Street complex, they fear the most. They don't want grassroots-funded and grassroots-oriented candidates, because then they can't control them. Now, I've been very lucky. I've managed to do that with, you know, the help of some people who've you know, advertised our campaign and made it national in the last one. But it's not to say that mold is broken. There's a path forward for grassroots type candidates. I mean, I think Ted Cruz is a good example, who was fighting a multi-million-dollar empire in Texas, had 2% name recognition. So there's room for that. But action matters, and it's definitely time for people to be volunteering for campaigns, contributing to campaigns, running for office, organizing campaigns, or joining issue-based movements, whatever it may be, fair tax, whatever it may be, school choice movements. But if you're not doing anything and you're really just talking, you're not part of the problem. You know, you're the problem. It's middle class, I think, apathy and the lack of GOTV getting out the vote on our side that's been absolutely destroying us for a very long time.
Well, you know, I kind of feel like the mainstream, and I know you've got to go, but I kind of feel like the mainstream media has been picking the Republican candidate for a while. It seems like during the primaries, anybody that was a challenge to Mitt Romney got attacked, whether it was Newt Gingrich, Rick Perry, or whomever. Do you really think that we can reach a point where the American news media has discredited itself to the point that they can no longer have that type of influence, Dan?
Yeah, and I think you're seeing different mediums growing right now. You're seeing the growth of web blogs, you know, blogs. You're seeing things like you know, the Blaze, Breitbart, the Daily Caller. You're seeing these mediums really take off. And as Americans move further and further away from the television, which is happening now, and move to more specific targeted internet mediums for information, you know, I think we can easily overpower that. I mean, Ronald Reagan won 49 states in 1984 with no Fox News, no Rush Limbaugh, no talk radio, and nothing. I mean, the only state he lost was Minnesota. So, you know, what's our excuse now? And the answer is we don't. Listen, I've been a victim of media bias here myself. You know, I have a friend in a local media station who told me that, you know, they just don't want to talk about your campaign because they feel like you can't win, as if that was their choice. Their job's to cover the race, not predict the winner. So, we can definitely move forward. And media bias, I think, is a real thing. I think Jake Tapper even alluded to it in a recent interview he gave, where, of course, they lean left. But, you know, we have our avenues, too. And, again, the action matters. Start, you know, taking advantage of it. And we have to run smarter campaigns. We have to start targeting specific specific media outlets, get our message out there, and we can do it. Listen, the country's not – we're in a lot of trouble, but we've been in – as a percentage of GDP at least, we've been in this situation before. We can fix it, but it's going to require people to speak truth to power. And, you know, right now, unfortunately, we simply don't have that. We have a fight between elitist establishmentarians and Americans, and people are confused into thinking it's Democrats versus Republicans. It's not.
Well, I believe I'm describing you correctly whenever I say that you are a libertarian, small government kind of guy. Running with that position in Maryland, you have what my grandfather would have called a long row to hoe. He was a farmer. And you're not going to be able to do that without support. As much as we talk about the fact that it ought to be grassroots and it ought to be about the people taking the power back, it takes money to run for office. I'm sure there are people like myself outside of Maryland who would like to help you. For anybody listening that thinks we could use a person with your values in Congress and use more people like you in Congress, and they want to get involved even though they aren't in your state, aren't in your district. I believe it's, what, the 6th district that you're running for in Maryland?
That's right.
Okay. How can they find you on the net? What's the website? How can they make a contribution to help put another conservative in Congress?
Yeah, well, we'd appreciate it. It's Bongino.com, Bongino.com. And you adequately described where I'm coming from. I mean, I am absolutely dedicated to the libertarian, limited government, conservative wing of the party. I've been really vocal about my fights with the establishment on my Facebook page, which has really been growing quite a bit. I'm closing in on about 45,000 likes on that. So, Dan Bongino, I do it myself. I use it as a weblog, and you can get a peek into where I'm coming from if you'd like to check it out.
That sounds fantastic. Once again, the name of the book is Life Inside the Bubble, Why a Top-Ranked Secret Service Agent Walked Away from It All. And, Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I wish you the best of luck. I think we can use a man like you in Congress, and I hope the next time you're on the show, I'm calling you Congressman Bongino.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar.